Another edition of the Winter Champion Series is upon us. Rodney Hogg has joined us. Hello, Hoggy.
G'day, Half. How are you going?
Going very well. Very excited about today's guest because you have got that many notes in front of you. I've never seen a man more prepared or more excited about an interview.
Well, I am excited because I'm my first captain coach at Northcote Cricket Club and gave me an opportunity when I was 16 and rapt to have a chat to him.
Well, he's been more than that. He's been the chairman of selectors of WA Cricket, a board member of Cricket Australia, a captain of a Bombers VFL reserves flag in footy, and the godfather, you tell me, of Australian cricket coaching, 9 Sheffield Shield titles with WA. Daryl Foster is our special guest. He joins us. G'day, Daryl.
Hello, Daniel.
Gee, that's a very impressive resume, mate. You must sit back and think, I've had a hell of a good time in sport through my life.
Well, when Hoggy rang me the other day about it and I went through it, I felt very tired after all of that.
And the reason I rang you, Daryl, is because obviously Mickey Malthouse has just finished his coaching career and people saying he was a great coach, and he was a great coach, but I looked at his past, and it was 3 premierships in 30 years, and then I thought, hang on a minute, Daryl's coached for 20 years for 9 premierships in Shield cricket, so I thought, well, what better chance to, let's have a chat to Daryl.
Well, Hoggy, I mean, it's marvellous players in that era in Western Australian cricket. I mean, it was the main captains that I had to deal with in that time were people like John Inverity, Rod Marsh, Kim Hughes, Graham Wood, Jeff Marsh. So it was a litany of very, very, very good cricketers.
And you coach Western Australian cricket in we're going to go through the whole lot in a minute, but you were coach in early 90s, and Mickey Malthouse was coach of Western Australian footy in the early 90s. Did you two cross paths and have a bit of a chat?
Yes, I went to a bit of a seminar with Mick in those days. I mean, he was even in those days very, very intense about things, and even at a coaching seminar, he didn't really seem to relax all that much. And, as I said, he was very, very intense about his work.
Have you got any sort of, just quickly, I know it's a question without any notice, but do you reckon there's a couple of major differences between a coach of an AFL side and a coach of a Shield team?
Well, I think most successful cricket coaches, Hoggy, are the ones who they defer to the captain. I mean, the captain's in charge 6 hours a day out in the field, and I think it's the role of the coach to complement the captain, where I think it's probably the other way around in football. The captain's there as a figurehead, gets out in the field and leads by example, but the coach pulls all the strings off the field. And I think that's a major distinction between cricket and football coaching.
The other little bit of bad, I've got a little bit of bad news for you. Trevor Bayliss has just been appointed coach of England and he's getting £600,000 a year for the next 3 or 4 years. So I don't know how that rubs with you at all.
No, I can remember getting $300 at North. But I sent Trevor a message the other day, and he's someone who I've got very highest regard for. He was a very workmanlike player, and I think he's a good old-fashioned cricket coach who defers to the players and makes them feel good about the game and involves them in all the processes that go on in cricket. So I think he'll be an outstanding success in England.
Can I just go back to you, because people will know you as a coach, but also you're a fantastic district cricket. I'm sorry to say that word, district, but and it'll be interesting just to, your philosophies and your ideas on your own personal performance. But at the age of 15, got selected, I think it's about 1953.
Yep.
So you're a darn good batsman, and I remember you at Northcote. I thought you were just superb. Tell us a little bit about your age of 15, you get selected, and that was when district cricket was fair dinkum, wasn't it?
Yeah, there was a number. I mean, I played at Essendon, and Essendon was perennially cellar dwellers in the district premiership. We were always finishing bottom and second bottom, and but it was a very, very tough competition. I can remember getting criticised, and people like Bill Jacobs and these people were Sam Loxton. They really gave you a bit of mouth, and as a young fella, I copped a fair bit of that, but it was a very good grounding.
You've never been that sort of a person. You've never been a apart from one day against South Melbourne. I think you got your dandruff up a little bit out at Northcote one day when I just remember that game when you took 7 for 18 and won the bowling average.
yeah, well, I kept you off that day. I think you fine leg,
didn't I? That's right. But that was, look, they're uncovered wickets. Let's talk to the young blokes that play district cricket now. Fellas, if you're listening, it was fair income cricket in the 50s and 60s and 70s. Uncovered wickets, no helmets on, and blokes trying to kill you. And it was just survival, wasn't it? Tell us a couple of people's, and you mentioned Bill Jacobs, so Fitzroy. I remember just listening to people, Fitzroy and St Kilda were really after you. They were a tough couple of clubs to play against, weren't they?
Absolutely. And Pran was another one. I think one of my early games was against Pran, captained by Sam Loxton, and they had John Power, the Victorian sort of fast bowler at the time. And you really had to earn your living in those days. As you say, I mean, I never knew what a thigh pad was, and you wore batting gloves that were just really thin green-purple things, green rubber things that didn't give you much protection, and no helmet. So you really had to learn how to bat.
And at the age of 16, you've got selected into the Victorian second 11 team, didn't you, at the age of 16?
Yeah, I did. It was against South Australia down at the St Kilda Cricket Ground, and I opened the batting with Bill Laurie, and Dick Maddox was captain of the team. And I can remember, my cricket education at Essendon wasn't all that great. I got picked because I had a bit of natural ability, I guess, and I didn't know how to run the wickets all that well, and I was stranded halfway by Bill Laurie, and that was my debut for the Victorian second 11.
Did you play any more, or was that the only one?
No, I played a couple against New South Wales up in Sydney, and I got 20s or something rather, but I was picked far too soon. I think everybody thought, oh, here's this young kid who, shows a bit of promise, we'll throw him in. And, unfortunately for me, it didn't work out. And when I was a better batsman later on, I never quite got the opportunity. So that's just the way it goes sometimes.
You sure you weren't just run out by Bill because he saw this young upstart with a big future in front of him?
Yeah. No, I don't think so. I got on very well with Bill, and it was just one of the, he dropped it and ran, and I was too slow to back up, so it was my fault.
That's an amazing selection, really, for a kid 16 coming from a weak club. Usually they pick you from strong clubs, but to come from a weak club, that is certainly a compliment and unusual. You didn't get a lot more opportunities. You then went into teaching at university, and that seems to be where you really, your passion, well, you've got passion for cricket, but in the world skills of teaching, working with young men, and then you sort of went down the path of coaching, and that's when you came across to Northcote in 67, 68, I think it was.
Yes, look, I'll always be very grateful for Northcote for giving me that opportunity, because if they hadn't, I'm sure that when I went over to Western Australia, and the reason for going there was that it was the only place in Australia at the time that you could convert a diploma from Melbourne University in physical education into a degree.
And I'll thank you for an opportunity too, because I was only 16. Cozier was 15 when you selected him. Gary Living 15. Brendan McArdle about 17. Jimmy Christo about 16. So you wanted it, but you were given an opportunity at 15. So I guess you've got to have some ability when you're young, but you were prepared to give young people a bit of a go.
Yeah, I think that's important, Rodney. I think sometimes we forget about that. I think youth doesn't fear failure, and I think giving you guys the opportunity, it paid off. And, I think that's what coaching is about. I think coaching is about recognising talent and trying to nurture that talent and give it the best opportunity that you can do.
What sort of talent was he, young Rodney, Darryl? Give me your first impressions of the lunatic fast bowler that was to be Rodney Hogg.
Well, he was I think one of the things that I remember about Hoggy is that as captain coach at Northcote, we practiced Tuesday and Thursday, and the practice wickets were really just rolled grass. And as captain coach, you really had to take the net where Hoggy and Gary Living and these people were bowling in. So they love to bowl to the old captain coach and try and knock his head off, bowl off 16 yards. And but really, he was a great competitor. And I can remember one day against Richmond, we had a north wind at Northcote Oval, and he was bowling downwind, and he was absolutely scaring the pants off them. And he was a great young kid, and I fondly remember him, and it's always great to catch up with him.
I want to ask you about a few blokes over at Essendon too, because I had a real passion for John Grant. I thought John Grant was an absolute superstar, and you played with Grant and Kirby for years. And yep. Let's talk about Grant first and then Keith Kirby as well, please.
Well, John Grant was vice-captain at Essendon when I sort of left there. And the late Ian Monks was a wonderful captain for the club and led us to our first ever premiership. But I knew if I'd stayed at Essendon that Granty was well ahead of me in the pecking order to take over as captain or coach or whatever he wanted to do. He had the right to choose what he wanted to do because he'd not only been instrumental in getting us into a great side. And it was at the time when we all came through at about the same age. We're all young 20s, and Granty and Kid Kirby, Johnny Peters, Greg Brown, etc. were all of the same age group and led by Ian Monks, you know, the elder of the group. It gelled beautifully, and that was the reason, I think, that we were successful. But Granty, what, only 5'8", yet he was quick as lightning. He skidded the ball more than bounced the ball, and he was a wonderful player for Essendon and for Victoria.
Well, I thought he was, Livo was my age, so we're kids, but John Grant to me was just the best. Well, I said Livo was, but John Grant to me was just an absolute superstar. Now, on with Keith Kirby, to me, over the years playing in Victorian cricket, I think there was three superstars. There was Warney, Jim Higgs and Keith Kirby were three superstars. Mm. Higgs plays for Australia, Warne plays for Australia, Kirby just a couple of games for Victoria. Why didn't Keith nail it?
Well, I think he hit it on the head. I mean, the opposition that he had, I think he had the temperament to do it. I have no doubt he had the temperament to, but it's opportunity. And if you don't really get the opportunity at the right time and somebody drops a couple of catches off you and you go for a few runs in front of the selectors one day, you know, your card could be marked against you. And I think that what happened to Kirby, he had a beautiful role and he bowled tidily. He was a very, very, very good leg spinner.
Graham Wood said to me the other day that when things got close, you're always a little bit nervous and a bit tense. And I used to bowl to you in the nets and I saw you playing games and I thought you're just the perfect batsman. But were you a bit too nervous and tense as a batsman? Do you look back on your career now and say, well, that's where I didn't quite nail it?
Yeah, it could have been one of the reasons, Rodney. I didn't think of myself particularly as a good player, and I probably played that way because I probably didn't have the belief that a lot of guys sort of had. So I was always, I think, doubting my ability, and that was probably not so much nerves. I think everybody gets nerves, but once I got out in the middle, it was fine. I was nervous the night before, the morning before, but I don't think I carried that out in the middle. But it was more self-doubt than anything that I think that stood in the way.
Well, I listen to people about Norm O'Neill petrified for the first, say, 15 runs of an innings before he goes out to bat. Johnny Scholes, terribly nervous before he went out to bat. And that's going to cost you, early in innings, which is the hardest time to bat, if you're over-nervous. Yeah, and I find Swampy Marsh is a bit of a nervy sort of a bloke at times. Was he affected because he came under your tutelage as a coach?
Yeah. No, Swampy was a bit nervous guy. But, I think they controlled it pretty well. I mean, you have to have a 50-test career like Swampy had and made the runs he did as an opening batsman for Australia. So, his record is very, very good. And, I think being nervous beforehand is one thing, but carrying it out in the middle is another. And I don't think Jeff was that type of player.
We glossed past, we'll just finish up with the Essendon and Northcote as far as district cricket goes, but that's 65-66. The Bill Laurie Grand Final, amazing. Essendon were 1 for 7, and you put on 122 with Ian Monks. That's for the second wicket or first wicket? I don't know which.
First wicket.
So you're 9 declared for 514. The game goes for years. in that game is Barry Davis. I assume you're certainly down at Essendon Footy Club. You're at Essendon Footy Club at the time?
Not at the time. I was at the Essendon Footy Club before that. But, Barry was part of that side. He's a good close mate of mine. And
Greg Brownie.
He's been very sick recently, and I'm pleased to know that he's getting so much better.
I've heard he's back to 90 kg or 92, so we're really wrapped about that. In that game was Monks. Was Monks at Essendon at the time? I think Monks, he was down at Essendon.
Yes.
And
no,
prior.
I think Ian might have finished his career by then. I think he well and truly finished his career because Monksy then was in his 30s when we were playing that final against Northcote. So I think he well finished. But Johnny Grant played a lot of second 18 footy at Essendon, and he was a very good footballer as well.
Was John Coleman knocking on the door every, say, as the game was going on and on each weekend? Was he knocking on the door and say, come on, fellas, get this over with, the footy season's about to start?
Yeah, we had a very good relationship with Dick Reynolds when he was coach of Essendon. He was a former fast bowler for the Bombers, and I can still remember as a young kid watching him streaming in with his black hair flapping everywhere. And he was a wonderful man. The 2 years I spent at Essendon, he was captain, coach of the club. He'd finished playing by then. And he was a wonderful man. And, he was a very, very good cricketer as well.
Daryl, did you ever get close to getting a game at senior level?
Oh, I think I was close. I think in emergency a few times. But the year I was on the senior list, I played second 18 and a lot of third 18 because I used to play before the senior game in those days, and the second 18 would play at the away ground. So I mixed it up between those two. And then the next year, I was one of the early players who had cartilages removed from their knees. And in those days, they took the whole thing out. And, I'm suffering with the arthritis in both of them at the moment. So, times were different then, and you didn't do any rehab after the knee operation. And I remember going back to Essendon to train, and somebody said, "Son, you lost your pace," and I'd lost my quads as well.
You then go across, and in your first year for Western Australia, 74-75, you win the Shield, which is an amazing performance.
Oh, look, as I said to you before, in those days it was the start of any sports science being involved in cricket coaching. Because I was a phys edder, I was very keen on the fitness aspects and the mental skills and the technique of the game. And, I couldn't go in as an untried coach and get to grips with all of those things. So the thing I chose first was to try and get the players as fit as I possibly could. And I think that paid dividends. We were very successful for quite a while, and cricketers were starting to work a little bit and do a bit of running and do some interval training and do this and do that. So, that was the start of it. And in those days, I think I was called a coordinator rather than a coach. And the coaching role grew as the 20 years progressed with the WASI.
At that time, Daryl, were there many other coaches for the other Shield teams or coordinators at the time, or was it more the captains taking charge?
No, I think it was more captains. There might have been mentor type people there, but I don't think there were. It was just about the Bob, nearly getting towards the Bob Simpson era, but that came a little bit later on. So probably most states were the same. They had a sort of a coaching quarterway that looks after practice. But I can remember the first the boys were playing a Gillette Cup final at the MCG, and I think I'd been there, and I hadn't been away with the team then. And the players clubbed in and got a fare for me. And that was the start of, really a full-time role with the side and accompanying them on all interstate tours, etc.
Was there a strong culture there when you landed in 74?
Absolutely. I mean, I'd have to give... I learnt more off John Inverarity than I'd probably learnt for the rest of my time. And I think a coach compliments the captain, and when I think about it, Inverurity had all the boxes ticked. You know, he was good with the young players. He could lift the team when they were down. He was a very good tactician. He led from the front. So, you know, he was nearly the complete package. And so that gave me an ideal start into my coaching with WA.
And Ian Brayshaw, pretty strong, didn't play Test cricket, but a star Shield cricketer.
Absolutely. I mean, he was John's vice-captain, and when Inverurity occasionally was away playing a bit of Test cricket or whatever, Ian took over. And, you know, he was, along with people like Jack Potter, he was one of the best best players that never played for Australia.
You love your fitness and obviously phys ed, and you're into I'm probably being a bit disrespectful here because it's human movement, isn't it? As well as
it's sports science, human movement, phys ed. I mean, phys ed in those days, and then everybody tries to get a more fancy terminology, but it still is physical education.
But you're also a teetotaler, aren't you? Or you were then. You didn't like people drinking, did you? How did you overcome that? Because let's face it, Shield cricketers did like drinking, didn't they?
Yeah, look, it was ingrained in the culture, and certainly in WA cricket as well. But Inverurity wasn't a big drinker, so that sort of helped there. But often when we'd go away, I'd be with the boys. We'd go out for a meal or whatever, and then they'd start getting stuck in the bar and. I never lectured to them about it, but I about 11 o'clock, half past 11 or something, I'd say, well, big day tomorrow, I'm off to bed. And I heard later a lot of the players would say, oh, that old bloody wowser. Oh, come on, boys, we'd better get off and do the right thing sort of thing. So it was a way of sort of skinning the cat without sort of standing up on your soapbox and saying, thou shalt not drink, or you should only have two middies today and none tomorrow and all this sort of stuff. But one of the things I do remember, particularly about Dennis Lilley, was that if he was not bowling the next day, he would have Bacardi and Coke was his drink of favour. He'd have three quarters Bacardi, a quarter Coke. But if he was bowling the next day, and you had to watch the difference, he would have a quarter of Bacardi and three quarters of Coke. So, you know, he was very, very shrewd. A lot of people think, you know, that players can't sort of tell the difference or do the right thing. But, Dennis was, a privilege to watch in that regard.
What did you think about Dennis when you first laid eyes on him?
Well, I first laid eyes on him doing his rehabilitation at the University of Western Australia. He broke down in 73. I came over to Perth to complete the degree, and Lilley was part of a program there that got him rehabilitated and ready back for cricket. So I never really saw him, a lot of him. Well, obviously saw him on telly and whatever, bowling in that time, but I didn't know him then. And so I knew him in his rehabilitation period, and he's come back to the game.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Dennis in that your mate Ian Brayshaw, I think, has written a book on that miraculous game. I think it's 1977, wasn't it? Western Australia and Queensland.
Yep.
Tell us a bit about that game. That was just amazing.
Yeah, look, it was quite an incredible game, and I can remember we batted first, and all we tended to do was just get out with very, very bad shots. And I can remember sitting next to Lilley, and I can remember him saying to me, make sure the fridge is full of beers when we come off Foss. He said, oh, I'm sick of this, the bloody bats, and don't do their bit, and they expect me to go out there and try my best and knock them over. Well, Dennis has always had white-line fever, and he went out there and he knocked over Greg Chappell, Viv Richards, all these blokes. And, we only made 70-odd and they made 60-odd. So it was quite an amazing game.
And you coached from 74 to, let's say, 94. You've got nine Sheffield Shields. You're actually up to, I think, 91. You had nine out of about the first 17 years. Western Australia haven't won one for 16 years. And you've been around the scene on the board and this sort of thing. Where's it gone wrong for Western Australian cricket?
I don't really know. I try and keep out of it. Even though I was on the board of the WACA, I don't think they made some very good coaching appointments. I think district cricket is gone backwards over here, and I'm not sure how district cricket is in the other states. I presume to a degree it's gone backwards for the years that we played district cricket back in the 70s and 80s. But, yeah, it's just an era, and the other states, I think, learned a lot from it at the time. I can remember Queensland coming over, sending people over and saying, well, why are you blokes being so successful? And obviously they went back and implemented a lot of that, what they saw and what they liked, and they became a powerhouse. So it's just, I don't know, the ball rolls around, Rodney. I think you have your time up, and you really, once you're up, you've really got to push ahead and try and keep up. And it's a bit like the West Indies, you know, they were so dominant, and then all of a sudden, you know, they thought their bowlers were going to fall down off trees, like I think we did over here. And instead of producing good cricketers, all of a sudden we were producing very mediocre cricketers, and we weren't putting enough time and effort into it.
Darryl, from a coaching perspective, when you take over at Shield level in 74, you win 9 premierships. I imagine it's very difficult to coach the same way all through that, because between 74 and 94, cricket changed a hell of a lot, as did society and the community. How did you have to adjust? What was your biggest adjustment as a coach to the new wave of players coming through?
I think you're dead right. I think you've got to reinvent yourself a little bit. But cricket was such a backward sport that I took time to get the fitness aspect of it right. And then, because we did all this fast bowling and biomechanics work at UWA, and we had Murley and Schaub and all these other people going through all this testing program, that we started introducing a lot of biomechanics and getting bowlers technically a bit better than what they were. And the last straw was to work on the mental skills of people. I still think that's probably the most important aspect. And Hoggy asked me earlier about, well, why didn't you make it? I don't think I had the mental skills at that time as a 16, 17-year-old to realise what I could do and what I couldn't do. And I think mental skills is a very important part. It's part of the trilogy of fitness and technique and mental skills that go to make a good player. And I think the higher up the ladder you get, the better mental skills you'll find the players have.
You did coach Australia for one game, didn't you?
Yeah.
At the Wacker.
I've got a one-nil record.
Did you want to coach Australia after that game? Because in that game we had the Mankad with Hirsty, we had Andrew Hilditch with the handle ball, and we also had a rest day, Darryl, that may not have fitted in how you liked to coach it, team, because what does an Australian cricket team do the night of a rest day? What do?
Bacardi's and Coke.
Yeah, no, look, I can't remember the rest of it. I can remember very well the rest of the game. But, I can remember you knocking over Majid Khan, both innings in Pakistan, who had a wonderful side. When you look through the names in that side, so they won for nil each innings after you'd knocked over Majid Khan. But, you know, Javan Miandan, Imran Khan, Safwaz Nawaz, Sikandar Bhakta, Safwaz Zaheer Abbas. I mean, they were a wonderful team. And I think Australia that summer hadn't had a great summer. And if I remember right, Rodney, Tim Hughes, who was captain, trot on a ball in the nets and virtually didn't take any part in the game. I think Hilditch took over.
No, Yallop stood on the ball. That was the end of Yallop's captaincy, and that's when Kim took over, wasn't it?
I don't think Yallop was in the team, Rodney.
Because he stood on the ball prior to the game. I think that's what happened, yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was another game. And anyhow, however it happened, it was a very good result. We beat them, substantially in that particular game. So I remember saying to the players, look, you're only as good as your last performance. And this was in a March, right at the end of the cricket season. So at least the Australian team finished on a good note that year.
Well, there was a little team party. You got in your car and drove off at 9:30 on at the start of the rest day. There's a lot of trouble after that, Darryl, wasn't there? We won't go into that, but we'll keep that one quiet.
Okay.
Look, obviously the Kim Hughes versus Lily Marsh. Kim had a wonderful tour to India in 79, made a million runs, comes back, and I would think you would have had a big say in the fact that he will now captain Western Australia because he did so well for Australia. But obviously there was a lot of, you must have had, there was situations that you would have had to just quieten it down a bit, I would have thought. Now, I know Western Australians all want to fight for Western Australians, but there was internal problems inside the Western Australian camp, wasn't there?
There was. I mean, I don't think there's any two ways. There were two camps, and but thank goodness they both camps realised that West Australia was the key to this. That if one camp didn't perform, then the team wasn't. So they had enough pride in their state, I think, to put some of those differences aside in the interest of the state. But one of the most important people in that time was a Packer person, Bruce Laird. And Bruce Laird always epitomised to me what was great about a Western Australian cricketer. And I used to use Bruce Laird as the go-between between, if you like, the traditional camp and the World Series camp. And if I'd say to him, look, so-and-so is undermining Hughesy and the rest of the boys and not pulling his weight, he'd be the one that would go and say, look, come on, mate, you've got to pull your head in. This is not, the rest of the boys aren't very happy about this. And so there were various ways of getting around it, but that was one sort of strategy that I used. And as you know, cricket is a very, well, I don't know how to put it, but one of the key sayings I confronted very early in my time with the team and how many test matches did you play? So I had to be very careful of directly challenging a lot of these particular guys. So I'd work through people to, get the desired result.
We're seeing we saw the evolution of the coach basically just looking at you as you went along from 74 to early 90s. Buchanan comes along, coaches Australia. His record is equal to none. Magnificent. No one's got a record like Buchanan. He finishes up. Mickey Arthur seemed to be doing a pretty good job over in Western Australia. He was appointed. Then he gets the lemonade and sass from the Australian situation. Lehman comes along. So we've seen the coaching going down the path of someone like Buchanan. Then it's falling back to someone who's a bit of a hands-on man's man sort of thing. What would you analyse as the perfect coach?
Well, I think it's somebody that understands what sports science can contribute to cricket without going overboard. I think cricket in Australia has gone overboard with sports science. It's not sports science's fault. They just produce all the research and things, and it's up to people to apply it properly. And I think that Darren has taken it back now to the sort of the raw edges. But Cricket Australia, you know, in dictating to, you know, this bloke could only bowl 18 balls in the nets today, and that bloke, and we're still having myriad of players breaking down with back problems and things. And I think there's been a complete misreading of what it's all about. But Darren, I think, is sort of listened to that, but he's got the more old-fashioned approach of, look, you get fit by bowling in the nets and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, it's gone. It's starting to go around in circles a little bit. I mean, Mickey Arthur was very good here, but I don't think an outsider was ever going to be successful at coaching Australia. Australian might be, hopefully, going to be very successfully coaching England, but I don't think the reverse would ever be the case.
You've had your work cut out for you with the assessment of Murley's action. We've now got the 15 degrees. Was that one of your... Whose idea was that?
Oh, no, that emanated out of the lab at the university. 15 degrees is when they first went about it, they said, oh, look, the spin bowler can have 7 degrees, the medium pacer can have 10 degrees, and the fast bowler can have 12 degrees. I mean, the reason 15 was chosen was that the research showed that about 90% of the world's bowlers fitted within that 90% of cases under 15.
What about that beautiful Pakistani bowler, Ajmal? Where's he at the moment?
Well, I think he's remodelled his action completely. He had been over here, and we had worked with him five or six years ago. But he was a beautiful bowler. And I think what's happened, Rodney, to all this 15 degrees business is that in the meantime, 2020 cricket has come in. And Ajmal led the Pakistani attack in every form of cricket, test cricket, one-day cricket, 2020 cricket. And I think with the small grounds, the big bats, all these spin bowlers have to try and do things a little bit differently. And if they try to bowl a quicker offie or spinners a bit harder, they probably went a little bit over the 20 degrees and they got in very bad habits. And so I hope Asmal can come back, but he's had to completely remodel his action.
Well, he's been able to achieve things in the past. Hopefully he can remodel his action and get back, because he's a fabulous bowler for cricket, full stop. Darryl, we need to keep moving, but we do appreciate your time this afternoon. It's been great fun having a chat to you about your career in cricket. It's been brilliant, been insightful, and I have no doubt very entertaining for our listeners as well. Thank you very much.
It's a pleasure.
Darryl Foster with us on a Halftime Hockey. Good stuff from you. What a good man.
No, it just flows, that one. That was an easy one.
Absolute Darryl. Beauty. Yep. We're coming up to news time, 2 o'clock. Back shortly.